Tom Dreesen is in the studio with us. One of Chicago's very own, one of the most successful comedians in show business, opening act for none other than Frank Sinatra. How many years? 14
yeah.
years with Sinatra.
I like to think he closed for me, but go ahead.
It's all a matter of perspective, I guess. But, I came in, I'm talking with Tom. I never knew that September 11th is your birthday.
Yeah, it's painful because it was always such a nice day. And then when that event happened, of course, it's a
changed
sad
your
day.
Birthday forever. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. But,
happy birthday, at least.
Thank you.
Happy
thank
birthday.
You.
So we're remembering so many things today from 15 years ago. Where were you that morning?
I was on my way to New York. Joe Pesci, my good buddy, had a golf tournament, and I would perform at it every year, an MC. He would bring in a couple of celebrities like Baryshnikov and Ray Romano or whoever, and then he and the celebrity would play against two pros. And I would MC, narrate the whole day, and then perform. And I'm on my way to New York. I'm walking out the door. The limo's out in front. And the girl I was staying with at the time, I said, goodbye, I'll see you. She said, hold on, a plane just went into a building in New York. And I said, gee, I'm surprised that doesn't happen more often. I'm thinking of a small craft.
Private plane. Right?
Yeah, I said, I'm surprised that doesn't happen more often. She said, no, this looks pretty serious. I walked in and I said, look, I got to go. Now the phone rings. It's a driver. He said, I'm waiting downstairs, Mr. Dreesen. We better go. I said, okay, I'm starting for those. She said, a second plane goes into the building. Mm. Now, I call New York, Joe Pesci's girl there, Kelly, the girl who was in charge of his tournament. And she's talking to her husband. I said, Kelly, is this event still going to go on? She said, why? I said, I just heard that two planes went into a building in New York. She said to her husband, oh, Dreesen, the comedian, he's on the phone telling funny stories again.
Wow.
He said two planes went into a building. And her husband says in the background, I'm hearing something on the radio about that now, and the phone went dead.
Wow.
The lines went dead.
Wow.
So now the limo driver calls again. I said, I don't know that I better check this out. I call my manager. He said, well, why don't you go to the airport and then see what happens? Well, then everything happened. So I just didn't go and obviously wouldn't have gone. You know?
Wow. What were the days after that like for you? I mean, you must have been going through pretty much the same as all of us, only you've got so many New York connections. You've got so many friends there, and it must have really struck you in a different kind of way.
I was in total shock. In my lifetime, I spent 4 years in the military, and in my lifetime, I never thought something like this could possibly happen to us in America. We always felt like we were just so not that vulnerable,
right.
And yet, when you think back, presidents being assassinated and things like that. It left me with those kind of feelings I had when John Kennedy was assassinated before you were born.
Sadly, I remember exactly where I was that day, too.
Yes, me too.
You remember that horrific and helpless feeling.
Yes.
I was right here at WGN when 9/11 was happening. We've been talking about it all morning. And that same feeling, and going out, Michigan Avenue, where Tom and I are looking out the window right now, it's always hustling and bustling and cars and people and tourists.
Yeah.
And you could have thrown a bowling ball down the street. It was silent on Michigan Avenue that day, and the planes weren't flying. Remember the how silent everything was.
It was eerie, and it was frightening, and again we felt vulnerable. And the hardest part for me when I went to New York and I went to visit Twin Towers and to go through all that, I waited in line like everybody else, and I went through and how I left when I left. As I was leaving, all these letters on the wall, Dear Mom,
right.
I'll never see you again.
Right.
Dear Dad, I wish you were here. Today's your birthday or today's Father's Day. I left there sobbing. I mean, tears.
Right.
I realized that, that even now, young Americans in high school don't remember 9/11.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, them teenagers,
teenagers
weren't even born when it happened. We just played the cut from your close friend, David Letterman, really one of the first non-news shows to come back after that nonstop news coverage that goes on. I think one of the most epic broadcasts in the history of television. Nobody else could have done what Letterman did that night, don't you think?
No, and that's why he was one of a kind. And I just did an interview for a thing for Huffington Post, and we talked about our friendship, David and I's friendship. And I was saying that we're totally opposites. David is shy and introverted and painfully shy, and I'm the opposite. And yet our friendship, from the moment we met, we became friends. And the the genius of David Letterman, the way he, as a broadcaster, he never, David was never really in my mind, he was a comedian, but he was a broadcaster first.
Right.
And he was always smart about broadcasting. And for him to do that that night, it helped heal a little bit of what America was feeling, you know, because we have to go on. And
the set, in a way, it was his clumsiness in the way that he presented this. He didn't read off of a teleprompter. He spoke from his heart.
From his heart, yeah.
You know, and that's, I think that's what made it so poignant and so so touching that way. It had to be difficult for all of you comedians, I would think, to go back on stage after, you know, America had been shocked like this.
Yeah, and what do you do? You know, you can't. There are some things to me that are just unforgivable in comedy. You know, although the basic rule in comedy is, what's the basic rule is, be funny. There's only one rule in comedy: be funny. You know, but I also think there's a time and a place. Sometimes, every now and then, somebody will just come out with something. I'll say, that may have been funny, but it was just so improper.
Yeah.
You know, but
right.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad to see you. Tom is, you're going to be in town for a little while.
I'm in town for almost 3 weeks. I'm so excited. Oh, a little over 3 weeks.
This is fantastic. And part of that time, Tom is going to be honored at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. There's a special evening that is called An Evening with Tom Dreesen, Celebrating a Life in Comedy, that Tom has graciously asked me to host. And I'm going to have a little Q&A with my pal and talk about his amazing... really amazing career. You must just stop and pinch yourself every once in a while of this kid growing up in Harvey, Illinois, and what you've seen and what you've done and the things you've accomplished in your life.
Yeah, I just said it was a very touching moment for my grandson the other day was asked to write about someone that he admired, but then also write about a hero in your lifetime. And he wrote a thing about me, and I can't tell you how much that moves me because I came from 8 brothers and sisters. We lived in a shack. 5 of us slept in one bed at one time. We were a rat-infested, roach-infested shack. No hot water. We had no bathtub and no shower. And it wasn't during the Depression. I'm not that old, you know. But it was just, I shined shoes in taverns from the time I was 6 years old till I was 12. I set pins in bowling alleys. I caddied in the summertime. I sold newspapers on the corner to help feed my brothers and sisters. None of this I regret. It's the greatest thing that ever happened to me, and that's a fact, growing up that way. But to the street that I sold newspapers on, they named that Dreesen Street. You know, the place where I caddied at as a boy later had a tournament in my name, you know, for years. You know, those kind of... also, the PGA caddies put me in the Caddy Hall of Fame a while back, the PGA Tour caddies, because there's some stories I wrote in Golf Magazine about caddying. So my life is, I on my hands and knees in bars in Harvey, shining shoes. Frank Sinatra was on the jukebox singing.
Wow.
Come Fly With Me. And years later, I was flying with him in his private jet all over the world. You know, I can recall a moment coming in from Cincinnati, Ohio. We're going to open a Chicago theater. And I used to bring my shoe shine box downtown sometimes and stand out in front of the Chicago theater. In those days, they actually had live acts in a movie.
Yeah.
You know, and I saw my first comedian ever there, you know.
Who was
it was an old vaudeville kind of comedian, and his name was Sonny something the other. Sonny. And I remember seeing a guy on stage telling jokes. I thought that was...
The guy would come out and do the jokes before they showed the movie.
People would sing songs, and then they would show a film.
Yeah.
And now I'm flying in from Riverfront Stadium in Cincinnati with Frank Sinatra, and he says, we're opening the Chicago Theater, Tom. They put $8 million into it, and they renovated it to its authentic beginning. And here I am with my name on a marquee with Frank Sinatra in my hometown. I sometimes have to pinch myself of this wonderful life. And yet, I paid a lot of dues. I mean, you know, Tim Reed and I were America's first black and white comedy team. History shows we were the last. The dues we paid, no other comedy team ever had to pay. And, you know, that was the civil rights. It was 1969. The civil rights movement from 1964 is only 5 years removed. Martin Luther King was assassinated. Bobby Kennedy was assassinated.
How was that received back then? I mean, that had to be controversial, and I got to think, not so welcome in some place.
And the fourth time on stage in Chicago Heights, a guy put a lit cigarette out in Tim's face, and then he tried to beat the hell out of me.
Wow.
And I boxed when I was in the service, but he outweighed me by 100 pounds, and he pummeled me, you know. And at University of Illinois, a guy took an ice ball and hit me in the face with it, went outside and made an ice ball in the snow and threw it and hit me in the face with it. The funny thing about racism in those days, and we'll talk about this Tuesday night, September 27th, If there was a black guy who hated white people, we used to work all black clubs in the North and the South, what they call the Chitlin Circuit, here in Chicago. And we'll discuss the places I worked in Chicago here that night. But if there was a black guy who hated white people, hated them with a passion, he wasn't mad at me. He was mad at Tim for being with me. Mm. See, Tim would be an Uncle Tom. Mm. If there was a white guy, a redneck, who hated black people, he wasn't mad at Tim. He's mad at me. I'm the N-word lover. And he didn't mind two or three of them getting me in a men's room down in Atlanta, Georgia, and trying to do a number on me. But the most part, people love what we did. And we wrote a book about it that's going to become a movie shortly. And one thing that they tried to do, outside sources tried to do, was break up the act, but they never broke up the friendship. We're still the best of friends. His children call me Uncle Tom, you know, his children, and I love them, and he loves my kids, and we're the best of friends. You know.
Let me take a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk more about Tom Dreesen's special night that's coming to the Museum of Broadcast Communication. September 27th, 6 to 8 p.m. Got a text in here, Tom, also talking about your history. It says, Dean, Tommy was one of the best 16-inch softball players in the South Suburbs. Go Wally's Tap.
Ah, yeah.
Did that ring a bell?
It's one of the teams I played with. I played with teams all over, you know, and that's one of them. Sokie Ann I played with, and Harcrest Decorators, a lot of, and I was a 16-inch. What we're going to go to break, I know, but what broke my heart when I had to go to California to move there as a comedian was 16-inch softball, that I wouldn't be able to play it anymore. It just crushed me.
I'm going to have to toss the ball around a little bit over at the Museum of Broadcast Communication. Have a little impromptu game there with the audience. Tom Dreesen's here. We'll be back in a quick second. Our pal Tom Dreesen, who has stopped by and visiting with us, he and I will be in conversation. It's going to be kind of multimedia, though, because Tom and I are going to talk about Tom's amazing life and history, but also show film clips and things. It's going to be a really fun night. I'm really looking forward to this.
Yeah, I am too. I am too. And everybody's invited, by the way. I think it costs $12 to get in, and that goes to the museum, you know, to the help with the Museum of Broadcasters, that I hope you'll all come down, and because Dean's going to grill me. He's going to grill me and take me back.
This is going to be like 60 Minutes style. I'm giving it to you. I've been nice to you all these years, but I'm giving it to you this night. This is my night to finally give it to Dreesen.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. But yeah. I want to throw a cheap plug. 3 days before that, everybody always asks me, when are you doing your show in town? I'm doing my one-man show, An Evening of Laughter and Memories of Sinatra, in Park Forest at the Freedom Hall, Nathan Mandelow Theater in Park Forest, Illinois. Saturday night, September 24th, and it's stand-up comedy, but then I go to a bar and I take them back to the years of touring with Sinatra and funny stories. And
you got to see Dreesen do what he does, to do his it's the reason that Sinatra wanted you and why you've had this longevity through the years. You watch Dreesen, I mean, it's one thing, you and I chat and you come on the radio and TV and we chat, but to watch him in action and doing his job, it's like a master class in stand-up comedy. It's really quite amazing. Well, I'm sure you get asked all the time what your favorite Sinatra story is, but was there one moment that was like really special to you?
Well, I mean, there's so many. Again, telling you, when I was flying in here in Riverfront, I'd been touring with Frank Sinatra for 2.5 years at that time. And we were flying into Chicago to open the Chicago Theater, and we just left Riverfront Theater in Cincinnati. He got standing ovation after standing ovation, and he walked off the stage, and he said, "Let's go, Tommy." And we jumped in the limo and squad cars and everything, rushed us to the private jet, and moments later, we were flying over the venue on our way to Chicago, my hometown. And I'd been with him 2.5 years and taking that for granted. And he was just sparkling. It had been a great show. He said, "Yeah, we're opening Chicago Theater, Tommy, your hometown." He said, "We're going to knock them dead, Tommy." Yeah. And all of a sudden, it hit me, oh, my God. I'm in Frank Sinatra's jet. We're on our way to Chicago, and he's telling me we're going to knock him dead. I got so choked up, Dean, I could hardly talk. And thank God he kept rambling on, because I would have burst into tears. I was so moved by, I think, oh, my God. That was a moment that I'll never, ever. But I can tell
Was the atmosphere around him? I mean, you know, like having Sinatra come by, come on, baby, let's go. You know, was it like Rat Packy? You know what I'm talking about? Like
where,
that vibe that I'm imagining was behind the scenes with Sinatra?
Yeah, it was, you know, see, it depends on where we were. If we were in his home, I stayed in his home 6 times a year. And then he was Frank, the hangout guy. You know, he was, and then if we were on the job, that was a totally different thing. Come showtime, It was everybody better know their job because he knew his, and every night was a command performance, you know. So yeah, it was those kind of things. And after the show, come on, let's go hang out, you know. He once said something about me that I treasure. It's in my bio, but he said, a guy said, why do you keep Tom? A guy from the New York Times. He said, why do you keep Tom Dreesen with you? He said, you mean besides the fact that he's funny? And the guy said, yeah, besides the fact that he's funny. He said, well, if I'm a saloon singer, and I am, he said, then Tommy is a saloon comedian. He said, by that I mean we're just a couple of neighborhood guys. And I that was another moment. That's
like the highest compliment you could get, I would imagine, right? Yeah.
You know, Dean, in all the years I was in toured with Sinatra, this is my 48th year in show business, but the 14 years I toured with Frank, I turned down more sitcoms than most comedians get offered in a lifetime, because every time the networks came to me and wanted me to work with an ensemble group, it meant I had to quit touring with Frank, and I didn't want to do that. I knew it was the end of an era, you know. By the way, Frank Sinatra asked me to grace the stage with him. Sammy Davis Jr. had me tour with him for 3 years, and Dean Martin put me on his shows. When I was growing up in Harvey, if you said show business to me, I said Frank, Sammy, and Dean.
Got it, man.
And that these three guys thought enough of my performances, my act, my work, to let me grace the same stage with them. I didn't care if ABC, NBC, or CBS ever even, you know, that meant more to me. I know it sounds like BS, but that meant more to me than anything else.
Oh, I can totally imagine. You talk to Letterman now? He's gone into this, you know, he's such a reclusive lifestyle, and he's got the Santa Claus beard going on. What's going on with him?
I told him he looked like Gabby Hayes last time I saw him.
He does look like Gabby Hayes.
But, he's lost. I mean, I say he's lost. You know, you work all your life like he worked, and then now it comes almost to a screeching halt. He did go to India and did a documentary for National Geographic about that 400 million people in India do not have electricity, and he wanted to highlight that. And we talk, we email each other back and forth, and I'm actually trying to get him to come here to Chicago for that day, to be honest with you, for a reason, because we made a bet in 2005. Indianapolis was playing the Bears in the Super Bowl, and we made a dinner bet, and so I lost. And so he said, dinner in Chicago, and he named the place, but it was like $2,000 a plate, and that place closed, you know, and now I was thrilled with that because he didn't get, now he's got a new place here that he wants me to take him to in Chicago. I said, okay, you come in September 26th, and I'll take you to dinner.
What's the place that he wants to go to?
There's a place called Grace's here. I never heard of it.
Yeah.
You've been there, Dean?
You better bring your couple of credit cards with you when you go there.
Well, that's the only reason Letterman, see, if I would
that's
have
the won. Only reason he's picking these pieces. He's of going course. Up to the Google, and he's
yes,
like,
he
what's
is.
The most expensive places
yes,
I can soak Dreesen at?
Yeah.
That's what he's doing.
I took him here to Wrigley Field. You know, I took him to Cub games, and we had such a good time, you know. Someday I'll tell you that story. He tells a totally different story of what really happened. But I wish we could get him on your show sometime so he could tell you that story.
I would love that,
the
too.
The day I took him to Wrigley Field.
I'm looking forward to September 27th, 6 to 8 p.m. We'll have a couple of hours and really dig into some of these stories and show you film clips and all kinds of things. It's going to be at the Museum of Broadcast Communication, which is on State Street in Kinzie, the brand-new museum over there that's fantastic. An evening with Tom Dreesen celebrating a life in comedy. Tickets are $12. And you can get them by going to museum.tv. Your shows that you're doing in Park Forest,
Illinois, yeah. September 24th, you can call Freedom Hall. And I wish I had the number with me, and I don't, but darn it. But a guy out there, Chuck Sabey, will take care of you and make sure, because there's not a bad seat in the house. It's an intimate little theater. It's called An Evening of Laughter and Stories of Sinatra and film clips and fun and laugh. They'll have a real good time.
All right. If you still have any money left after you take Letterman out to dinner, we'll see you the next day after that on the 27th. Tom Dreesen.